Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. Graduation season now is around the corner, so let Job Genius power your job search. Now, Job Genius offers free advice on job searching, resume writing, interviewing, and tips to ace your first day on the job. Just go to expresspros.com/jobgenius today and search Job Genius on YouTube. Now let this educational video series be your guide for entering the workforce. Now, Job Genius is brought to you by our friends at Express Employment Professionals, a leading staffing company that employs more than 500,000 people a year. And when you're ready to start your job search, well, turn to Express Pros. Apply now at expresspros.com for administrative jobs, including customer service and sales and accounting positions, as well as skilled labor jobs like drivers and forklift operators and welders and CNC programmers. Now, each Express Employment Professional office is locally owned and operated. They never charge a job seeker a penny, no fee. And Express Pros takes pride in connecting the right people with the right company. Just go to expresspros.com. All right, we're loaded up today. Glad you are with us. You know, it's amazing that I don't know why in the last number of months I have people that I have known over the many, many years of my life you just lose touch or whatever, have gotten back in touch with me. One guy out in Santa Barbara who knew me back in the day, nearly 30 years ago now. It was 30 years ago. And he wrote me a note. He goes, there's so much urgency in the information you're putting out every day. He goes, and a sense that you got to get it all in. He goes, don't forget to pause. And I said, okay, I'll take a breath. And it was said with the greatest of intentions. I got to talk to Barry Farber the other day, my good friend, one of the greatest, smartest radio hosts in the history of mankind. And the fact that he praises me, and I'm sitting there saying, Barry, what are you doing? Stop. I literally was glued as a teenager to the radio, listening to Barry Farber, Barry Gray, waking up in the morning when I was in grammar school, rambling with gambling. John Gambling is a good friend of mine now. Of course, generations of broadcasting, and I have so many friends in radio. I don't have many enemies. I've never believed in any way, shape, manner, or form that my success is predicated on everybody else's failure. That's a belief in a zero-sum game. And I remember listening to Barry, and I was telling him this. I said, Barry, I would sit there. It was on late at night. I'd turn on the radio, and I'd never shut it off. And it wasn't turn off the TV in my house. It was shut that radio off. And I'd shut it off. They'd leave my room, and I'd turn it back on again, just like a good son would. And listening to all these pioneers of radio, and New York was in the forefront of it. I mean, think about this. Barry Gray, Barry Farber, names, if you don't know them, you need to Google up some of their tapes. Barry Farber speaks 35 or 6 or 7 languages. It's insanity. He's just absolutely brilliant, a master and wordsmith in ways that I could never dream of communicating. And, he'd say, go get your globe. I'll explain the history of communism. And I didn't have, I'd go get it, a globe or a map, whatever I had at the time. And I sat there and I got an education. Didn't know I was getting an education. Never dreamed at that time. Never did it once even cross my mind that I would ever have the opportunity to be on a radio program. Never dreamed that I would be doing this every day. So in response to my friend in Santa Barbara, I'm pausing, but it's hard because this news cycle is fast and furious. And for all these guys that paved the way, I'm extraordinarily grateful because let me tell you something. Think back when Rush started his syndicated program. It was 1988, and I was in Santa Barbara. I remember when somebody first told me about Rush Limbaugh, and I was in the radio studio of that college station in Santa Barbara that gets written about. Hannity said this in his 20s. He's an idiot. I said, yeah, it was so embarrassing. I was a dope. And anyway, I remember, you got to hear this guy. He does these homeless updates. It's the funniest thing I've ever heard. And, he's talking about the homeless people. There was this massive fig tree on Highway 101, which is the Southern Coast Highway or whatever, Pacific Coast Highway. And And I just was fascinated. But he, think about all that Rush had to do clearing the path, you know, for so many other people that followed. Made it easier for all of us that followed. And now look at it today. In 1988, what, we had 250 radio stations talk. Now there's thousands. AM, FM band, all over the place. And it's the number one format and has been for, what, a couple of decades now on radio. And I never thought I'd ever have the chance to do this. Never. Packed my bags after I got run out of town and, you know, put it in the back of my contractor's work van, everything I owned. Got hired over the phone for $19,000 a year. Huntsville, Alabama. Guy by the name of Dave Stone, who was a dear friend of mine who passed away a while ago. And I still talk to his son, who's an amazing kid, Evan, and his wife, Lois, and Bill Donovan. I stay in touch with him. I stay in touch with every one of my bosses I've ever had. They've all helped me get to where I am. They all opened a door when I didn't deserve it, I felt. And they all accepted that I needed to grow. Because, and frankly, that's actually missing a little bit in radio in a lot of different ways. But I digress for a few minutes here. Let me first, I'll talk about it later with Geraldo and Jonathan Gillum, and we'll get into this. I don't even know what to say about Samantha Bee. Now, I've maybe have seen online clips of this show. It's so awful. And she seems like an awful person that I'm never going to watch it. You know, I just, my quick perusal instincts tell me I'm not watching that. Just like I don't watch a lot of shows. And what she said about Ivanka Trump, the first daughter, is there's not words to describe. But, you know, it's a very interesting time. And I stand by my principles that I'm not going to change. My attitude is she hasn't been fired yet. She's now since issued an apology after this tirade against Ivanka Trump. The First Lady spokesperson has given out a statement. The double standard is truly astounding. Time and again, the Trump family and members of this administration are subjected to false reporting, hateful rhetoric, outrageous lies, all in the name of freedom of speech or comedy, yet the mainstream media stays silent. We have talked a lot about Roseanne Barr this week, but yet at the same time, that lunatic Keith Olbermann was just hired by Bob Iger. And you could just go look at his Twitter. And I'm not calling for Olbermann to be fired or silenced in any way. People choose. If I happen to be flipping the dial and get to SportsCenter or get to ESPN and he's on, I'm just not going to watch it. That's my choice. That's my freedom. You ultimately, as the listener and the viewer, have all the power here. That's why I don't support boycotts. I don't call for firings, as repugnant as a lot of people's comments are. And there's just this, there's a coarseness. I see it on social media. I actually took Twitter off my phone. I just said, you know what? I'm not sending out a tweet that doesn't get vetted by two other people, usually Linda and Kristen and sweet baby James. And I used to love these Twitter wars. But it became another job. And I just realized that it took a turn. I can't really explain it. It was always mean. I was kind of mean. I love to fight. I don't back away from any fight. I like fighting. I mean, the last one I guess I had was with Kimmel. And by the way, Kimmel works at ABC for Bob Iger and Disney. Alec Baldwin, Father of the Year, works for Bob Iger and Disney. Keith Olbermann works for Disney. Al Sharpton works for MSNBC. And we're just going to have to really, you're going to have to decide here, you know, because the line's always changing. And I think the only answer is this: let the marketplace decide. Let the public decide. Which is why I've always defended that idiot, Bill Maher. Says outrageous things, and I just don't watch your show. I have the power not to watch it. And everybody else has the same power. And There's a risk here. All right, we've got a lot of other things to get to. We have massive developments as it relates to North Korea. I'm going to get into that in a second. Andy McCarthy is here today. We've got a report how the FBI spy, according to the Daily Caller, may have tried to plan a story accusing General Flynn of having an affair. We're going to get to that. And we have just so much more about how corrupt the media is. Let me start with this, though. The FBI spying operation, it seems, you know, so focused on exposing Russian election interference, not getting dirt on the Trump campaign. Well, these new allegations today are very interesting from the Daily Caller. While working as a spy for the FBI, this so-called, what everyone in the media is calling an informant, but he's a spy, acted as an unnamed source who tried to get at least three major U.S. newspapers to publish reports that former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was having an affair with a Russian professor. Anyway, a Russian-British researcher at Cambridge University who studies the history of Russian intelligence said multiple reporters have told her that this spy that was infiltrated the Trump campaign, that nobody will call a spy, was behind allegations that she and Flynn had an improper relationship when he visited Cambridge in February 2014. Flynn served at the time as a director of Defense Intelligence Agency. The FBI confidential, they say, informant spy invented a false story which he passed on to official channels and the press in full knowledge that his personal attack was going to cause me, an innocent party, enormous harm. So this is coming directly from the person that was supposedly involved with General Flynn. She tells the London Times that this spy told reporters that he had been seen leaving the dinner with Flynn. Reporters from three newspapers, Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, approached this woman at around the same time in February and March of 2016 with allegations related to this so-called interaction with Flynn. They were throwing around, quote, all sorts of things at me, love, sex, money. Obviously, I reject them all, she told the London Times about her interactions with reporters chasing the Flynn story. I just want to add that I'd never been interviewed by any authorities, and clearly, if there were any doubts about who I am and what I do, I would have been interrogated. And according to the Journal, which was the only newspaper to publish a story on the matter, this woman did sit next to Flynn at a dinner and showed him a postcard that Joseph Stalin had sent in 1912. Apparently a little off color in some way or revealing in some way. The Journal reported that the American authorities had been alerted to Flynn's interactions with this woman, and Flynn failed to disclose his contact with the researcher to the Defense Intelligence Agency. The DIA official who accompanied Flynn to and from the event said he saw nothing at the dinner that warranted Flynn's disclosure of this interaction. Anyway, it's since been revealed that this spy in the Trump campaign, a veteran of three Republican administrations, is it the guy that went after Clovis and, of course, Carter Page and Michael Caputo, that he apparently involved in all of this thing, first raised concerns about this these interactions at the Cambridge event. The New York Times reported May 18th that the FBI spy, which the newspaper didn't identify but is now known to be this guy Halper, was alarmed by Flynn's apparent closeness with a Russian woman who was also in attendance at a Cambridge seminar. The concern was strong enough that it prompted another person to pass on a warning to the American authorities that Mr. Flynn could be compromised by Russian intelligence, according to two people familiar with the report. Why didn't they ever go to the Trump campaign? Why wouldn't they have told Carter Page and Donald Trump to this day have never met? And if James Comey was so upset in the spring of 2016, why didn't James Comey go to President Trump and say, look, we're watching this guy. He's associated with your campaign. Simple. Remember the most exculpatory thing in the Comey memo. Trump saying to Comey, Comey's own work. Oh, listen, I'm not involved with any collusion, but if anyone around me is, we need to get to the bottom of that. Boom. Case over. Close up shop, Robert Mueller.
Message and data rates may apply.
When did it become okay for men to be lazier, softer, fatter? We need to bring the men of this country back to greatness. And it's easier than ever with Ageless Male Max, a patent-pending formula with an ingredient that helps boost your total testosterone.
promoting greater increases in muscle size and twice the reduction of body fat percentage than exercise alone. Plus, an amazing 64% increase in nitric oxide, which can be handy in the gym and in the bedroom. Take your manhood to the max by trying your first 30-day bottle free. Just pay shipping and handling. Not 10 days, not 15 days, but a full 30-day supply free. When you text the word WILD to 797979. Finally, a formula that boosts total testosterone. If your results with Ageless Male Max are too intense, please decrease use. For your free bottle, text WILD to 797979. Text WILD to 797979.
All right, as we roll along, you know, this ought to alarm everybody. And when things eventually politically slow down and maybe this president actually gets a year's worth of governance without a bunch of nonsense hanging over his head, imagine what he'd really accomplish. I mean, they made apparently tremendous progress. It looks like this June 12th summit in Singapore with Kim Jong-un is going to go on. The president gave an interview to Reuters. I'll touch on that in a few minutes here. But this is going to be huge news. Facebook, Google, Twitter, all of the social media now that has come to dominate pretty much everybody's life and has become an indispensable tool. Yeah, but there's problems within all of that. Security issues, privacy issues. Then there's the politics of these companies. Latest example of this, the headline on the Drudge Report is Republicans, Google, Republicans are Nazis. So here we are less than a week before the California primary. Google listed Nazism as the ideology of the Republican Party. In the knowledge panel that provides easy access to information next to search results, Google listed Nazism as an ideology of the party. The word Nazism was hyperlinked to a secondary page that shows Nazism alongside other ideologies of California Republicans and like conservatism, market liberalism, fiscal conservatism, and green conservatism. Now, California voters have been casting absentee ballots for weeks ahead of next Tuesday's statewide primary elections, which is going to determine the majority of the House of Representatives, the next potential governor of the world's fifth largest economy. But voters looking for information, you search for California Republicans on Google or California Republican Party. Yeah, Nazism shows up next to the search results until, of course, Google took the listing down. That was after an inquiry by apparently Vice News. Oopsie daisy. Yeah, actually, we got the screenshot right here. I'd love to show you, but it's radio. It's not TV. Words, no pictures. All right. Now, major news on the president as it relates to North Korea. We'll get to that next. And Deep State Gate, Andy McCarthy, Newt Gingrich in the next hour.
With only a kite, a house key, and wet hemp string, Benjamin Franklin captured lightning in a bottle. Over 260 years later, with a little resourcefulness, ingenuity, and grit, we're not only capturing energy from the sun and wind, we're storing it, ensuring Americans have the energy they need whenever they need it. Learn more about the nation's leader in energy storage at nexteraenergy.com.
You know, we never get to the good news. Thanks, Scott Shannon. 25 till the top of the hour. This is actually amazing. It's going to be interesting to watch how it all plays out. But according to the Federal Reserve's Atlanta division, they're now predicting economic growth for the second quarter, which, you know, January, February, March, April, May, June. They're predicting it would be as high as 4.7% GDP. We're currently in the middle of the second quarter, so that's the growth rate that they're seeing now. It can change dramatically, actually, but just something to keep an eye on. Now, their model estimate for real GDP growth in the second quarter, 4.7%, up from 4%. And they're now casting second quarter real consumer spending growth increase from 3.2 to 3.4%. I mean, if that happens, that's called an economic explosion, which we haven't seen since Ronald Reagan, which would be amazing for the American people. I know for all you Trump haters out there, you know, for you to advance to where you want to go and to get power back in the hands of Democrats, that means the president has to fail. And I think we've suffered enough after 8 years of Obama. I've given you those statistics enough. You have them in your head. Other news, I have known Dinesh D'Souza for a long time. Interviewed him when he got out of prison, pled guilty in 2014 to violating campaign finance laws, sentenced by a federal judge, 5 years probation, which included 8 months of living in a community confinement center in California, required to pay $30,000 in a fine. And the president tweeted out and followed up today, is given a full pardon to Dinesh D'Souza. He was treated unfairly by our government. I will tell you, with everything that we now know about campaign finance violations, there's such a double standard. This all goes to Hillary Clinton, the Clinton standard of justice for her and her family and her friends, and then another, you know, justice system for the rest of us, you know, the common people, the little people. Now, what's even more fascinating, so I went to this event. It was put on by the Hollywood Reporter. I don't go to events. And they actually said to me when I went to their event last year, they said, you know, we checked. This is the first time in whatever 12, 13 years you've ever been to an event. But they asked me in such a nice way. I said, you know what? I'm going to go for once after 13 years. Remember I went last year? And I went. And they couldn't have been nicer to me. And then the guy said, wow, you have not been to an event. We checked. They call it these red carpet things. In 13 years, I said, yeah, because I don't like them. I was very blunt with the guy. Couldn't have been nicer. They invited me back this year. They put me on this list that they put out every year about meeting people. And I went back this year, and as I was going in, I ran into Martha Stewart. And I think I had spoken to her once. I remember the night either she was going to jail or coming home. I think it was when she was coming home. It was happening in my hour at 9 o'clock on Fox. And if you remember the Martha Stewart case, it was one of these cases, they can't get you on the underlying crime. They get you about, oh, lying about the crime that they can't prove. I have a problem with that. A huge problem. And I followed her case pretty closely. And look, what do I know about homemaking and, you know, whatever. And I said to her, I said, you don't know me. She goes, she laughs. She goes, yeah, I know who you are. But I said, you know, I watched how you handled yourself during that period. And I thought you showed amazing grace and strength that I really admired in you from afar. And I said to her, I thought you were also treated horribly and unfairly. The president now said he is considering giving her a pardon. I hope he does. And I also mentioned Rod Blagojevich. We had done some interviews with him. I don't have a problem with pardons. I actually like redemption and forgiveness. And these people have spent, Martha Stewart spent, what, almost a year in jail, right? It was like Denny Hastert was caught pulling out, you know, $9,900, which is below the $10,000 legal reporting limit. Okay, so stupid. You know, if you're going to take out money, take out $500,000. Don't take out $10,000. Make sure they see it, because otherwise the government's like, okay, why are you taking out that amount of money? So you're doing something nefarious. But they couldn't prove it. Now, it turns out that he was paying off somebody. I think he admitted to it, if I recall. You know, when he was a coach, he was abusing children. But they couldn't get him for it. But they did get him again on this other end of it. And it's sort of like in other cases, it's like double jeopardy. You get off on the federal side, but then you got to take it on the state side. We have some real problems as it relates to criminal justice. Anyway, I hope that I'd like to see the president give Martha Stewart a pardon. I just that was the extent of my interaction really with her. What? Why are you? Clint Lawrence deserves a pardon. I have said that repeatedly. Christian Saucier got one. And he deserved it. He was the one that took the 6 photos inside the submarine because he was proud of working for the United States Navy. He kept them privately for himself. Unfortunately, he lost his phone. Instead of the slap on the wrist, which was what would normally happen, no, they threw the book at him and put this guy in jail unnecessarily for a year, and the president rightly pardoned him.
I think you did great work on that.
The
and
president,
I think we owe you a debt of gratitude.
No, so nobody knows me anything. I know.
Okay, I take it back.
Thank you.
No, thank you. But in all seriousness, there are over 200 military men that are in military prison right now because they were constrained under the confines of the Obama rules of engagement.
It's horrible.
And that is what President Trump needs to be looking at. No offense to Martha. No offense to Blagojevich.
Okay, now just for the record, as you now throw this at me, I have talked about this more than anybody.
I know.
Anybody.
And that is why we owe you a debt of gratitude. You're welcome.
Nobody owes me a debt of gratitude. That's nonsense. All right.
I can't take it back twice. It's weird.
So the New York Times is now complaining, citing anonymous sources today who claim that the former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe wrote a secret memo after President Trump fired Comey. And while not all the Times sources agree, some of those sources are saying McCabe claimed in his mystery memo that the real reason Trump wanted to fire Comey was because he wanted to stop the Russia investigation, which, of course, the Times thinks is a major bombshell that proves obstruction of justice. Well, first of all, it does not. The president can fire Comey for any reason he wanted to. He didn't even need a reason. He could think he was too tall, dressed funny, whatever. That he just didn't like the way he looked, he could fire him. It was under his authority. So this is all nonsense fed to you by the New York Times. Anyway, so we'll see. You know, we have anonymous sources who don't agree here. In other words, citing a mystery memo that nobody's seen and written by a top FBI official who was fired because he lied under oath. A lot of good that's going to do. Sounds credible to me. Sounds like a typical media day. Anonymous source, blow it up, hysteria, breathless reporting. Everybody runs with it. Never mind 3 days later, but don't admit you were wrong. That's what we have now. That's what your media has become. It starts Washington Post, anonymous sources, 15 of them, anonymous. They say this. Oh, my gosh. Breaking news, fake news, CNN, breaking news, conspiracy TV. Blow it up into some hysterical moment in history. We got him. Got him. No, never mind. No correction. Nothing. Journalism's dead. Where did you first hear that? Anyway, so New York Times, McCabe's memo, one of several he wrote, highlights the conflicting roles of Rod Rosenstein. Now, that's actually hilarious because we've been the ones saying he's conflicted out of all of this from the get-go because he's witness A as it relates to the firing of Comey because he recommended it. Anyway, the New York Times goes on, he supervises the special counsel investigation. Yeah, but don't forget he signed the fourth FISA warrant based on unverified, uncorroborated, bought and paid for Russian lies. Funneled money through for a law firm through Fusion GPS, paying a foreign national, Christopher Steele, and literally lying to FISA judges and not telling the judges who paid for it. I'm getting to say that fast. You know, I'm living, eating, breathing, sleeping this 24/7, so it shouldn't surprise anybody.
And there's a list on your left if you need it.
I know. I saw the list of everybody that's helping us. I know. If I read the list, that's the end of the show. It go to the end of the hour. But many of the current former law enforcement officials suspicious of some of his other actions, including some of Mr. Trump's congressional allies, to view crucial documents. There's a reason that they are not giving us the truth. You know, think about Trey Gowdy yesterday. I don't want to get back into this. Based on what I have seen, I don't know what the FBI could have done or should have done other than run out a lead that someone loosely connected with the campaign was making assertions about Russia. I would think you want the FBI to find out whether there was any validity to what those people were saying. Yet, why didn't you go in the spring of 2016 to Donald Trump and talk about somebody to this day he never met by the name of Carter Page and tell the Trump campaign, we don't trust this guy. We got an eye on him. Be careful. Why not? Because they didn't want that narrative. They didn't want, they never liked Trump. Anyway, so apparently Trey Gowdy way ahead of his skis on this, implying that these documents presented at the top secret White House Spygate briefing basically debunked the Spygate scandal. The problem here is this. The media assumed that Gowdy, what he said, based on what I've seen, was referring to the secret Spygate documents that were presented at a White House briefing. Molly Hemingway pointed this out in the Federalist today. The DOJ, FBI did not present any documents on Spygate to anybody at that meeting. She said Gowdy recently suggested the FBI did nothing wrong when it used at least one, they say, informant spy to secretly collect information on Donald Trump's presidential campaign. Public reports indicate, however, that Gowdy never, ever reviewed the relevant documents on the matter subpoenaed by Congress. In fact, a spokeswoman for Gowdy told the Federalist that the congressman doesn't even know what documents and records were subpoenaed by the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. The briefing that Gowdy and other lawmakers attended was scheduled at the behest of the White House after the DOJ obstructed the subpoena. They're still obstructing all these subpoenas. They don't want to turn over the documents because the last time they turned them over, it resulted in you knowing about how FISA judges were lied to and the bulk of information was Hillary's bought and paid for money-funneled foreign agent dossier of Russian lies. This is our country. It's outrageous. People better get engaged here. This isn't funny. Gowdy intimated that the information he received a briefing last week, the FBI did nothing wrong. I want to trust the FBI too, but all I have to say is Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, and the list goes on. I'm sorry. Those people I don't trust. I trust rank and file. I don't trust those people. They abuse power. We have evidence. Lying to FISA court judges in applications the way they did is abuse of power. It's shredding your Fourth Amendment constitutional rights. This is as serious as it gets. And the same players rigging an investigation by exonerating Hillary before the investigation. That's a problem, too. And putting spies inside the Trump campaign and trying to spin it like they're informants is just another cover-up and lie. Yeah, oh well. It's only the United States. By the way, Ted Cruz is now up by a double-digit lead. I knew the media was wrong. I got to get this in here. Newt Gingrich at the top of the hour. Andy McCarthy also in our next hour. So the president gave an interview to Reuters as it relates to Kim Jong-un and this denuclearization deal that they'd like to work on. He said in the interview on Air Force One, flying to Texas for some fundraising events, he still thinks that the June 12th summit can happen. And then he said that I'd like to see it done in one meeting, but oftentimes that's not the way deals work. By the way, I think that's very smart of him to say, and that's true. Might take a couple of meetings. There's a very good chance it won't be done in one meeting or two meetings or three meetings, but it'll get done at some point. It may get done really nicely, really intelligently, or it may not get done intelligently. It may be done the hard way, he said. He said he believed that Kim Jong-un wants a deal, but I think it'll get done in a very smart, organized fashion and that the North Koreans want it as well. Listen, all I know is there's no more missiles being fired over Japan. Guam's not being threatened. The region's not on high-level alert mode. He's not threatening the continental United States as of the moment. He crossed the DMZ and he released our hostages and we didn't leave a penny in cash or other currencies to the tune of $150 billion like Obama did or Bill Clinton did. And we've got nothing to lose. The only thing we have to gain is a safer world for your children. I think I'll take that position. And if it takes a few meetings, that's fine with me. This is historic. All right, so much to get to. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We'll get Newt Gingrich's take on the latest out of North Korea. What was said about Ivanka Trump. Pretty unbelievable. And also, we got the latest on Deep State Gate. And, yes, spying within the Trump campaign that nobody on the left seems to be able to acknowledge or admit. Same with the media. That and more in your calls. 800-941-SHAWN and Andy McCarthy next hour. All right, glad you're with us. Hour two, write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, looks like the June 12th Singapore summit is back on. We've got the latest in Deep State Gate. The president pardons people and the media goes nuts. He's sending messages, secret messages, to witnesses in the Robert Mueller campaign. It's absolutely insane. As of next week, we're going to have Newt Gingrich on Monday on this program as he releases his brand new book, Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Comeback. Oh, you mean basically everything the media doesn't want to talk about. Newt also has a piece that is just devastating entitled Why the Mueller Probe is Really Five Scandals and Not One. We'll explain all of this. First of all, I can't wait. We get the first interview for the book, Trump's America, The Truth About America's Our Nation's Great Comeback. I can't wait. How are you?
I'm having a ball, and I have to tell you, it is amazing to watch what's going on. I mean, don't you find the same thing? That just, you watch these guys, you realize how totally wrong they are. I mean, the New York Times the other day saying there were 1,000 people when they now had to come back and admit there were at least five times, maybe six times, that many people. Every time I turn around, I'm watching the people on the left fall apart.
You know, it really is amazing. I remember conversation. Maybe I'm a little more high strung than you are. I don't know. Maybe it's the historian in you that gives you more perspective. But I think I remember one time in 2004, before the election, the re-election of George W. Bush, we were actually sitting down and having a conversation. And I said, look, they got to do this. They got to do this. They got to do this. They got to. And you looked at me very calmly, let me rant and rave like I often do. And then you said, well, if they don't do it, they're going to lose. The only problem here for me is that if we don't get this right, if we have a dual justice system for Hillary, if we're allowed to have spies inside of campaigns, if we have surveillance unmasking and leaking raw intelligence that is not fixed, if we allow FISA judges to get lied to, if Hillary gets to destroy evidence that's subpoenaed and it's not called obstruction, I think a good part of this country loses its soul.
Well, I think the whole country loses its soul. You know, one of the things that has hit me, and it's probably because of a piece I did for my newsletter, Gingrich Productions, which we also reproduce at foxnews.com, on the idea that there are actually five parallel scandals, not just one. And after I wrote it and I thought about it for the weekend, it hit me, and I hate to say this, because Jeff Sessions is a good guy, and I thought he was a very courageous senator, and I was with him, Calista and I were both with him, in the very first meeting where Trump came to Washington as a candidate, and Jeff was actually the host, and in many ways I like him so much. But what I realized was, when you look at the scale to which the system has avoided investigating the Clintons, it has avoided investigating the cover-up of the Clintons, I've begun to conclude that Attorney General Sessions simply is not capable of doing the job he ought to be doing. I know the president's tweeted about this and talked about this, but for me, it's a very painful and very difficult decision. And it goes back to your point, which is we're in a genuine national crisis. We have a scale of corruption, a scale of dishonesty, a scale of cover-up we have never, ever experienced in American history. You know, not the grand scandals of the 1860s, you know, not the problems with Watergate. There's no example comparable to the depth and scale of the current scandal. And we have to have an attorney general who's actually dedicated to the truth.
So what is the answer?
For whatever reason, well, the answer always is going to be to replace Sessions. I mean, and I say that unless Sessions wakes up one morning and decides to be the attorney general. I can't imagine, given everything I used to know about Jeff Sessions before he became attorney general, I can't imagine, given his values, how he could be doing this. It's astonishing to me, and I don't say that lightly. It's a piece of why I wrote the new book, Trump's America, because there's this huge underlying movement, much bigger than just Donald Trump himself, of Americans who are saying, enough, we got to fix this. We got to get our country back. We got to do the things that work. And I think that sadly, tragically, I would say truly tragically, the Attorney General doesn't seem to be capable of breaking through his staff and breaking through the Washington establishment and doing his job. And it's just, I'm truly, and I've spent a year, almost 2 years now, thinking about it, trying to understand it, and I just decided, you know, it's time to speak up and say, if you're not going to do your job, if you're not going to be the Attorney General, if you're not going to follow the criminal trails wherever they lead, then, you know, maybe you need to go home.
I actually have the same feelings about Jeff Sessions as you do. I mean, I've known him for years. Always thought he was a good, honorable, decent man. And yeah, I mean, I'm now at the point where I am stunned at what I can only see as paralysis. And I and it's hurting the country. I mean, this is the problem. This is consequential now in a way that exceeds anything that I can even compare it to.
Well, and I want to make clear to everybody who's listening to us, you and I both like Sessions. We both really think he's a decent human being. We both wish this was not true. And it should tell people how deeply troubled we are. I'll give you one example, which I just think is, and you've done this for a year and a half now, so it's amazing. You take the case of the guy who bleach bit Hillary's hard drives, who got immunity. Okay, let's just start with that. You take that example and you compare it to how they've been treating the Trump people, and you say to yourself, why is it after almost 2 years of a Sessions Attorney Generalship, we have not yet had released the decision documents that explain to us how they could have given this guy immunity? Are they crazy? I mean, what are they doing? And I could go through 30 examples like this where you just think to yourself, these people are nuts. And yet we have not seen, this has nothing to do with him recusing himself over the Russian campaign issue, which is, if you think about it, a very tiny, narrow issue. I mean, he could say, yes, I'm recused on that. Now let me go over and look at this. Nothing recuses Jeff Sessions from looking at this question, how in the devil could you have possibly given immunity to a guy who bleach bit these computer parts?
Well, let me add, it's worse because they were subpoenaed. It's worse because there was a deletion beforehand. It's worse because no one ever heard of bleach bit, which is basically acid washing your computer. And Ed Henry, I guess, famously now asked her, did you clean your computer? Did you wipe it clean? And she goes, like, with a cloth? I mean, it's so spectacularly, I'll play it for you because it's so spectacularly Clintonian that it's almost, it almost puts her husband to shame.
Did you wipe this, sir?
What, like with a cloth or something?
I don't know.
Like with a cloth? I mean, so cavalier, but also the aides were told to break up with a hammer, BlackBerries, and iPhones. I mean, that to me is straight on obstruction of justice. If I did it, you'd have to visit me in jail.
Well, one of the reasons in my recent newsletter and Fox News.com piece that I went back to the idea of five different scandals is you have to go all the way back with Hillary to 1978, 1979, when she invests $1,000 in cattle futures and she makes $98,000. Now, the Wall Street Journal did a study and said it was literally, statistically, mathematically impossible for that to happen. It was called, we all know what it was. It was called fraud. She was given insider information. She was held by the hand by somebody who took care of her. She made money because she was, married to the next governor of Arkansas. But the deeper point here is, they have been doing this, and the Clintons have been doing this and getting away with this for 30 years.
Let me give you my... Let me give you a little bit of my Irish heritage and background. There's always this pessimistic side of me. But this time when I think, think of Chuck Schumer saying, oh, don't take on the intelligence community. They'll get you eight ways in Sunday. And you have so many high-level people and so much abuse of power. You know, I have known you for so long, and there have been times where you've looked at me and you're shaking your head thinking I'm gone off the rails. I wish I was wrong on a lot of what we were. You know, we started this endeavor on March 7th of 2017 when we broke the story, Sarah Carter, John Solomon, that in fact FISA surveillance had taken place on Trump Tower. Now, a lot of details were remaining, but now we know it's all true. All of it. Now it's spies in the campaign, but nobody will call them spies. They're just no. They're whatever they call them. They're just respondents or whatever, informants.
Yeah, right.
And don't lie. You have shaken your head at me a few times, thinking I'm nuts. You've looked at me and said,
"No."
Go ahead.
Look, I think twice in your career, you have been so historically prescient that it's amazing. Once was in 2008, when you understood before anybody else in America that Barack Obama was a radical. And you tried to explain it. You tried to lay it out. You were totally right. And you couldn't break through. And I have to confess, I was one of the skeptics. And the other was...
Do you remember what you told me? And as a friend, you really met, you know, early on, you said you're blowing up your career. You're gonna die on this hill.
Yep. I was wrong.
No. But I didn't stop. I can't stop. It's not in my DNA to stop. Oh, you're funny.
And you were right. And the truth is I think in the long run, you will change history. Because I have this naive romantic belief, and it's something I try to explain in my new book, Trump's America, that the fact is we are a romantic country in which most Americans really believe in idealism, and they really believe in the rule of law, and they really believe in the Constitution. And in the end, the truth comes out. And when the truth comes out, these corrupt figures in the left are just all going to be destroyed, and their role in history is going to be truly sad.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Newt Gingrich with us. He'll be with us Monday for the full hour. His soon-to-be-released book, it's released next week. It's called Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback. You can order right now. We'll put up a link on Hannity.com, and you can get early copies of it. Make sure you get it on day one. No one seems to understand this president. Newt Gingrich does. All right, Newt Gingrich is with us. He'll be with us Monday, too, for a full hour. Brand new book coming out. I'm excited. Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback. That's not a story the media will tell you. Let me just give us a headline. You know, I was there emceeing your event in 94. Ronald Reagan brought me to politics, and that's history. The contract was history. And you're going to argue in this book, because you gave me a little bit of insight ahead of time, sneak preview, if you will, that this is like a third wave of following Reagan, following the contract. Is that a good way to characterize it?
I think that's right. I think what people need to understand is this is a wonderful intersection of Donald J. Trump and the American people. And it's the combination of two. It's not just President Trump. But it's also not just the American people. It took this unique, extraordinary, combative, and remarkably smart leader working with the majority of Americans to begin to create the scale of change we're now seeing, which I think is historic. As a historian, I would say this flatly. It's historic. It is, I think, going to put the country back on the right track. And, you know, last year I wrote a book called Understanding Trump, which is focused on him because he was so remarkable, so unique, so new. But I began to realize during the course of the year that understates the scale of what you and I are living through. And you know this, of course, because of your vast audience and your many friends, that there's just this enormous underlying wave of people who love America. They love freedom. They love prosperity. They love job creation. They love the idea that we should be strong.
I'm short on time.
Trump is kind of a gear guy.
Is my fear that there's a lot hanging in the balance here because they want to kill him? Is that a justifiable fear, or am I, you know?
No, you're totally right. This is the greatest tension since the Civil War. The people who hate Trump hate him at a level of bitterness and deepness that's almost unimaginable.
Pathological.
And we are caught right now in a magic moment. And you see this on the elite media, you see it in the academic community, you see it in the Hollywood crowd.
It's everywhere. All right, let me plug the book. You'll be on Monday, Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Andy McCarthy next.
You know, I'll say this about Gowdy. Mr. Gowdy, I worked at Maine Justice. You never worked there. You were an assistant U.S. attorney. I'm sure you were the best assistant U.S. attorney the world has ever known. But the FBI has done stuff in this case that I've never seen. In the years that I worked at the Justice Department as Chief of Staff to the Attorney General, and I'm not the only one.
Was there a spy?
That is not a term I've ever used in the criminal justice system. Undercover, informant.
Hey, genius. It is a counterintelligence investigation. It was not a criminal investigation. Hello, Trey, former federal prosecutor.
That is a word that they use, however, on the counterintelligence side of the ledger. And it was a counterintelligence investigation. FISA is not part of a criminal investigation. It's part of a counterintelligence investigation. The informant, a word that you do use, spy, a word you don't use, spy is often used in counterintelligence investigations. Go ahead.
Informant, those are all words I'm familiar with. I've never heard the term spy used.
So when the president says Spygate, that's not a...
What does he mean he's never heard the term spy used? Is this a joke? Is this a joke? It's the proper nomenclature that people like me and others who have heard the term used apply to somebody who is used by the FBI or another federal department or agency to spy on other individuals and provide information to the government.
Well, I've never heard that used in the criminal justice context.
We're not talking about the criminal justice context. We're talking about this guy sits on the damn intelligence committee and I have to educate him? No wonder he's retiring.
Yes, now I'm going to go on to bigger and better things, you know. I don't know what else the FBI could have done. I just don't know.
Interview Mr. Papadopoulos and be done with it. And the word spy, Mr. Gowdy, is used in the espionage world, in the counterintelligence world. And that's where this began, Mr. Gowdy, Mr. Former Federal Prosecutor. And that's the whole point. Informant is used in the criminal context. Spy is used in the espionage context. And Mr. Halper, excuse me, Professor Halper would not have been in and around the Trump campaign gathering information but for the fact he was working for and paid for by the Obama administration and working directly for the FBI.
All right, 23 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, our toll-free telephone number. That was the great one, Mark Levin. He sounding off loudly on this whole Trey Gowdy issue and how wrong he is, as, you know, we've been pointing out here. Andy McCarthy has been doing a phenomenal job on all of these issues on National Review online, and he's been discussing this, among other things, including, yeah, the FBI was investigating the Trump campaign, was spying on the Trump campaign. Andy McCarthy, National Review Online, is with us. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Sean, except Mark hurt my feelings when he said that Trey Gowdy might be the greatest federal prosecutor of all time. I don't know what to do with myself here.
Well, let's remind everybody your background. I mean, you've done amazing work for the country. And, you know, you were involved in the Blind Shea case. If I'm not wrong, the first Trade Center bombing and all these other really high profile cases, and winning, I think, all of them, if I'm not mistaken.
Those are the good old days, but it's long ago and far away. I appreciate talking to you, though.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Gowdy, and then let's move on from there about everybody trying to tell us, oh, no, there are spies in the campaign, but they're not really spies, they're just informants.
Yeah, well, Sean, I pick up the New York Times this morning, and there's this big story about McCabe, right? And in the second paragraph of the story, it talks about how Comey's firing is the central focus of the special counsel's investigation into whether Trump tried to obstruct the investigation into his campaign's ties to Russia. So it's sort of like depends on day to day. So when they decide that, you know, it's important to stress that the investigations about Trump having ties to Russia. That's the spooky story we've heard for 2 years, right? Now we find out that they're doing all kinds of counterintelligence tactics and breaking the norm where the incumbent administration is really not supposed to use these powers to investigate its political enemies. And when you ask them about that, they say, investigation of Trump ties to Russia? What Trump ties to Russia? What could you be talking about? So
right.
It's a little bit dizzying.
You know, as you look at this whole case here, Andy, look, I've never seen a bigger abuse of power case in my life. I have, to me, this is a real threat to the system of justice, to our Constitution. And by that, I mean, we know Hillary violated laws. We're supposed to have equal justice under the law, equal application under the law. We know what the Espionage Act is all about. I think if I hired you as an attorney and I was being charged with obstruction of justice and you had to defend me against deleting 33,000 emails, acid washing my hard drive and having aides bust up my Blackberries, I think you'd have a hard time defending me. I'm guessing. I don't know. Then you see all of the anti-Trump people involved at the highest levels of the DOJ and the FBI. And you see the struck page memos, which you've examined in detail. And then you see this faulty timeline as it relates to the investigation into Russia, and that leads to FISA abuse, FISA warrants being, you know, handed out based on what are paid for lies by Hillary Clinton put together by a foreign national with funneled money through a law firm through Fusion GPS, and there's real Russian propaganda to manipulate the American people, but also to get a warrant on an American citizen. And it wasn't just one application, it was three subsequent applications. To me, that's abuse of power.
Yeah, I think there's been a pretty massive abuse of power, Sean. And at this point, the only thing that we can really safely rely on and I think have to demand is transparency and disclosure about it. And I feel that sort of very personally because at a number of junctures in this escapade, I have told people that certain things that have happened could never happen. Like when we first heard that they may have used the Steele dossier to go to the FISA court, and when I was asked about that, I said, you know, what are you, out of your mind? The government is not going to take uncorroborated information. I'm not even sure if we knew at that point that it was sponsored by the Hillary campaign, but just the mere fact that it was third and fourth hand hearsay from unidentified sources, I told people, you know, look, the FBI is going to do what the FBI does. They're going to scrub a few of the facts that they think will be helpful for them for a FISA application, and you will never even hear Steele's name because they will have buttoned that up and made sure that it's completely corroborated before they present it.
Isn't that part of the FISA law, Andy?
Well, it's part of their
It's FBI protocol, but it's also the law. You can't go to a judge and present a judge with unverified, uncorroborated information paid for by the opposition party, not tell the judge that that's the case. And remember, in that interrogatory in Great Britain, Steele himself said, well, no, that's raw intelligence, maybe 50-50.
Well, Sean, two things. Number one, to satisfy the standard to get the warrant, you have to show probable cause. And sometimes you can get probable cause on a single witness if the witness is credible enough, but that's highly, highly unusual. Usually you have to have corroborated information. And if you are aware that you have presented information to a court that is not credible, like your witness has lied or there's bias behind in this case, the dossier, that, you know, somebody has a motive to lie, that stuff all has to be disclosed to the court so that the court can weigh that. And that's really what the law is. I've never heard of a situation where uncorroborated, unidentified information gets brought to a court, and what the government says is that they believed the agent or the guy who purveyed the information. Because what a judge wants to know is the people who saw and heard the things that you say make out probable cause that somebody's an agent of a foreign power. I want to know who those people are and why I should believe them. Well, don't tell me the agent is credible.
Isn't that like the whole issue of Michael Isikoff using the same source to make it appear like they're separate corroborating sources to the same story. And, you know, and the Grassley Graham memo, the bulk of the application came from the Steele dossier. And, you know, this mysterious reluctance and resistance of Rod Rosenstein and the DOJ to hand over subpoenaed information. The last time I checked, we had separation of powers, co-equal branches. Congress has constitutional oversight responsibilities, and they're not cooperating.
Yeah, Sean, I was a prosecutor for 20 years. I've never heard of trying to corroborate a witness with a press story. I mean, you know, it's pretty basic investigation 101 that what happens here is the FBI goes out and does an independent investigation to corroborate things so that the FBI can prove them, not that they've been, you know, spouted in a newspaper by a journalist. And I'm not taking a shot at Isikoff. He's a, you know, he could be a perfectly fine reporter. But
but his source was Christopher Steele, and they presented
it. We know that, right. We know that now. But my point is, in a normal situation, you wouldn't even think of trying to corroborate something with a press story.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me go back to this mysterious reluctance and resistance, as I call it. We know that Rod Rosenstein begged Paul Ryan, coming up to the final hours of a subpoena that had been given. That led to what we now know of all of this FISA abuse. And the reluctance to release, and I've been told by my sources, that if certain documents are released, this whole narrative about Russia collusion, this deep state network that I and others and yourself have discussed, blows up in their face. And they're using, they are literally absolutely obstructing Congress from doing what is their constitutional authority. How do we fix that?
I think the way you fix it, unfortunately, is by continuing what's gone on here, which is that Congress can't be intimidated by the media and all this chatter about how they're destroying these institutions. There's nothing more frightening in the history of governments than a government that has police power that's not accountable to somebody, and in this system in particular, accountable to the sovereign, which means to the people's representatives. Congress created the Justice Department. They have an absolute right to conduct oversight, and they have to keep trying to conduct it, which means they have to keep demanding these documents. And I would point out to people, every time they have told us, and I'm particularly sensitive to this because I did this kind of work, we do have to be very careful about national defense secrets and sources of intelligence, methods of getting intelligence. But every time they tell us, if we tell you this, the sky is
Oh, by the way, they've been caught lying and using national security as a means of redactions that turn out not to be true. Like in the case of Comey, well, they redacted the part where Comey didn't think that, in fact, General Flynn lied. I don't mean to interrupt you. We'll take a break. Andy McCarthy, more on the other side. This is the Sean Hannity Show. All right, as we continue, Andy McCarthy, he's with NRO Online. He's been doing masterful work, and his background as a prosecutor. You were in the Southern District of New York. Is that true that the show Billions is based on the Southern District?
I'm embarrassed to say, Sean, I've never seen the show, but I have heard from people that's
hilarious.
Okay.
I love that. You got to watch this. Go start from the beginning. It's a great show. Let me ask you about, I think we are now seeing a rogue group of people, not rank and file, FBI, CIA, intelligence people, but the Strzok, the Pages, the McCabes, the Comeys, Loretta Lynch's even, and others that abuse the powerful tools of intelligence. Spies in the Trump campaign, lying to FISA court judges, not fixing it, as you mentioned in the last segment. And then I go to what Judge Ellis III said about the Manafort case. You know, really? A 2005 tax fraud case? Let me see. Is this so you can put the screws to him so he'll sing or maybe compose because you want to either prosecute or impeach Donald Trump? Is that what's happened here?
I would think so. And look, I'm not totally against that. I have to tell you, I put the screws to plenty of people. It's part of what you do in a normal prosecution setting. The problem with it here is what you allude to in your beginning description of that, and that is that the FBI and the Justice Department got enmeshed in the politics of the 2016 election. So it appears that, you know, virtually everything they've done is political.
So you're gonna go after Donald Trump by putting the screws to Paul Manafort, who worked for him for like 3 months, and you're gonna drag up a 2005 case that has nothing to do with Russia as a means of putting the screws to him so you can impeach a president. And you're going to put spies inside the Trump campaign, but only the Trump campaign.
Sean, if I thought that there was strong evidence that a political campaign was involved with espionage with the Russians, I would use every single...
Why wouldn't they have... The president never met Carter Page to this day. Why not in the spring of 2016 go to Donald Trump and say, hey, we're worried about this guy?
Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that that happened here. What I'm saying is if there was a good basis to believe that there was an espionage conspiracy between a political campaign and an enemy of the United States,
yeah,
I think everybody would say we need to use every tool we have to ferret that out. If they don't have that, then what they're doing is political.
And do you believe it's the latter? I got to run. Do you believe it was political spying?
Right now, the evidence certainly is tending in that direction.
Yeah. All right, Andy.
We need disclosure.
Yeah, that's what they're avoiding. Good reason, I bet, too. All right, Andy McCarthy, thank you. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Geraldo Rivera, Jonathan Gillum, News Roundup, Information Overload next.
Ivanka Trump, who works at the White House, chose to post the second most oblivious tweet we've seen this week. You know, Ivanka, that's a beautiful photo of you and your child, but let me just say, one mother to another, do something about your dad's immigration practice. Is you feckless. He listens to you. Put on something tight and low cut and tell your father to stop it. Tell him it was an Obama thing and see how it goes, okay? We'll be right back.
Hello, welcome to Hollywood. Would you like to have sex with me?
No.
Would you like to have sex with me?
No, of course not.
Would you like to have sex? No, please. I'm begging you. I think you'd enjoy it.
Big guy.
Yeah.
And his unit is relatively small.
Right, right, right.
Then it sort of gives you this inadequacy.
Right,
thing.
Right, right. Oh my God. You have 10 seconds to then guess what is in my pants. You ready?
Set.
Go.
It looks fine.
You should use two hands. Two hands. You're going to make a fine wife.
Thank you.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah.
Answer me, yes or no?
Yes.
If you're here when my wife and my kid come out here, you've got a big problem. You know that, don't you? Okay.
Maybe you are as dumb as you look. You are with Fox, right?
You're the one that almost hit my wife with the microphone in the face?
Not.
Oh, you didn't?
Almost hit your wife.
Yeah?
I honestly did not. We have...
You want to apologize to her on camera? I asked you a question. Do you want to apologize to her? I asked you a question.
You guys gotta
get out of here.
I'm leaving this message with you to tell you. You have insulted me for the last time. You have insulted me. You don't have the brains or the decency as a human being. I don't give a that you're 12 years old or 11 years old or that you're a child. So you better be ready Friday the 20th to meet with me. So I'm going to let you know just how I feel about what a rude little pig you really are.
All right, that was Samantha Bee. She has apologized for the word she said in light of the issue with Roseanne and her comments and her being fired. And then, of course, we got ABC and, of course, Jimmy Kimmel's on every night. And in the era of Me Too, I mean, some of the creepiest, disgusting, despicable video so-called comedy skits I've ever seen. And, yeah, there he is, Father of the Year, Alec Baldwin. He also works at ABC along with Kimmel and... then on top of that, then we got Keith Olbermann, who was just hired. And, you know, Keith tweeting out president, Nazi this, Nazi that. Really? We're going to use the C word against the daughter, the first daughter of the United States of America. And nothing has happened yet. Anyway, joining us now, Geraldo Rivera's best-selling book is out, The Geraldo Show. Jonathan Gillum, author of the newly released best-selling book, Sheep No More. Thank you both. Geraldo, let's start with you. Does an apology cut it? I'm steadfast, and I say I never support boycotts or firings because people have a choice. You can condemn horrific remarks, which we have done when we hear them and see them, but there seems to be, you know, a double standard that's pretty acute.
I think that what she said was low down and dirty. To call any woman the C word is tantamount to calling an African-American the N word. Some things cannot be uttered in our society for our society to be sustained and to thrive and to live. I'm so angry. You know, I have a lot of problems with Attorney General Sessions' zero tolerance policy at the border, and children may be separated from their undocumented parents. Having said
you did see the pictures from the Obama years, right, of people in cages.
They called President Obama, you may recall, the deporter in chief. But to blame Ivanka in a way that is so vicious and is so absolutely beyond the pale is inexcusable. Now, should she be fired? Should her program be boycotted? I leave that to someone else. I, like you, believe the marketplace can speak for itself. But I think that this deserves absolute condemnation from everybody. I'm glad she finally apologized. But I think that the lesson that should be learned over the last couple of days is that even in the name of humor, there is a line you may not cross, Sean.
This wasn't funny. You know, I mean, that's the whole point. But what's your take, Jonathan?
I tried to watch that show, Samantha Bee Show, once just to see what it was about. And it was like watching cable access, first of all, so it's bad quality. But let me just tell you, I'll reflect what Geraldo said, and I watched a show the other day called Silicon Valley. I've watched every episode of that show. It's on HBO, and it's all about Silicon Valley, and it's about these tech companies which are closely related to the media moguls and their mindset and their ideology, and the Democratic Party and their ideology. And they did a whole episode on how a gay guy was wanting to start an internet site on this new internet they're coming out with, but he was a Christian and he got outed as a Christian, and how nobody was going to use him anymore in Silicon Valley because he was a Christian. And the whole show was bashing Christianity. I know.
Oh, by the way, Joy Behar, who compared Christianity to mental illness, she also works for Bob Iger over at ABC. I mean, Bob Iger's right. Got a treasure trove, to use a Disney phrase, of talent over there. Really talented people. Yeah.
Well, the point with that and with this Silicon Valley show is the fact that we're not looking at moral outrage when we see what ABC did with Roseanne. I disagree with what Roseanne said. If ABC wants to fire her and cancel the show, they're a company. They can do that. But we're not looking at moral outrage. We're looking at an outrage of people who, when somebody says something against what they believe politically, it's not moral. And there's a huge difference there. I look at Geraldo. I look at Rick Unger, Danielle McLaughlin that comes on. I look at people like that with moral integrity. But these decisions are not made based on moral integrity. They're based on a hatred of anything conservative. And that is the basis of why you don't see the firings of the leftist people on these networks saying things and like denigrating Christianity and things. You don't see them fired. You do see, however, if a conservative makes a mistake, they're going to be gone. And Bill Maher has said things just as bad as Roseanne.
And Samantha Bee.
And Samantha Bee, but they don't get fired. It's because they are liberal. And the people that are conservative that say things that should get them fired, they get fired. Mm-hmm. And so it's not coming from a level of moral integrity.
You know, I have always been a staunch advocate of freedom of speech. And I also have faith in people, Geraldo. In other words, everybody has choices today. And if you're offended by a program, and I think in some cases people feign moral outrage. I don't think people are feigning it here in this case or in some of these more recent cases. I think it's real. And I just think, but there is a choice at the end of the day, and the power is in the hands of the consumer. And there's such a concerted effort and millions and millions and millions of dollars being spent to silence conservative voices. I think it's a very dangerous, slippery slope for those that support and demand boycotts, firings, etc. Look, every company's got to have their standards. Bob Iger, to me, is going to have to explain how he keeps Keith Olbermann and Alec Baldwin and Jimmy Kimmel and fires Roseanne, because all of them have really serious issues, in my view, meaning the people that are working there still.
To the point that both you and Jonathan make, that conservatives get hit harder when they slip, when they make a mistake. I agree with it. I am not a conservative. But I think that that's where your idea that you spoke about last night on the air has such power. A coalition. If the center and the right unite, it is just as powerful as the left. The left dominates the media. But if moderates and conservatives can stand together to say that one rule fits all, that if there is outrage against a rightist who says something that's out of line, I want that similar outrage and a similar reaction if a leftist says it. There's no doubt but that the and it's my 17 years at Fox has made this so clear to me, that there is a skewing. Like right now, I'm looking out at 6th Avenue, my office here at Fox News, and I looked
down. By the way, Geraldo has the biggest office of Fox News.
You have the same exact office on the other corner. There's NBC, there's CBS, and you look down Media Alley here, and this building stands alone. The media is totally stacked in the, toward the progressives. That's why there was such utter disbelief when President Trump was elected in November of 2016. But if we stand together, if we say one rule fits all, that if she goes, he goes, I think that that's the way to do it. But I also believe that the market has a wonderful way of weeding out the miscreants. You know, after a while, the foul speaker, the evildoer will be outed. You know, I think that Keith Olbermann is an example, I think, of amnesia. People forget how obnoxious he was. We even forget, Sean, you may recall that he led the fight against me after the line in the sand, and I threatened to beat the living.
Yeah, but you know something? I don't want to be in a world where Keith Olbermann doesn't have the right to be a jerk.
He does, you know. Why people will watch?
But why does Bob Iger hire him when you know all these despicable tweets about the president and on and on and on? I mean,
is the double standard of which you spoke,
Jonathan.
Not only a double standard, but I got to tell you, it is odd to me when somebody like Keith Olbermann or Samantha Bee have shows or are commentators. When I like watching television, I like listening to talk radio, but some of these people, you have to ask yourself, who are they talking to? Are they getting ratings, or is somebody at ABC and these other networks, are they just hiring leftists? Is that all it is? Because it's not like they're stacked with people who have liberal views and conservative views and they're interesting to listen to. I could listen to you. I could listen to Geraldo talk. I've always been a fan of Geraldo. And your voices are great on radio and on TV. Keith Olbermann, are they just hiring these people just to get voices?
Listen, I'm not going to take away. Listen, even though the guy is absolutely nuts and insane, and I don't agree with a word politically that comes out of his mouth, they used to do a good show, and it was on SportsCenter, and it was you know, with Dan Patrick. I mean, I'm not saying the guy doesn't have some talent. I just think he's nuts. And everybody that's worked with him apparently thinks the same.
You know what I look forward to? If these North Korean, it's a big if, but if these North Korean negotiations go successfully, and if there is meaningful steps taken for denuclearization and de-escalation of the crisis that's existed all of both of your lives, entire lives, most of my life from the early 1950s, if President Trump can pull this off, take this rabbit out of the hat, I want to see how the left responds to what will be undeniably a historic achievement. Will they give him the same kind of credit they gave, for instance, Jimmy Carter when he got Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat to shake hands at Camp David? Will it be that kind of a gushing, attaboy, way to go, Mr. President, Trump for Nobel Prize, or will it be, he gave away this, or he did this, well, it was really Pompeo who did it, or, you know, it was Heather Nauer who did it, State Department, give credit to some obscure Democrat who did something, or Dennis Rodman, the basketball. You know, I want to see if they give credit where credit is due.
Yeah, don't hold your breath. All right, as we continue more on Samantha Bee, she has finally apologized. What do you think should happen, Geraldo, to Samantha Bee? Should she be fired?
Well, I just got the text of the apology. I would like to sincerely apologize to Ivanka Trump and to my viewers for using an expletive on my show to describe her last night. It was inappropriate and inexcusable. I crossed a line, and I deeply regret it. Now, that sounds to me sincere and also frightened. So it could be that the Roseanne example has sunk into Samantha Bee. Maybe it will be a cautionary tale to her and to others similarly situated that having an open mic doesn't mean that you have the right to cross the bounds of society. And I think that the more people point out when it happens on the left, just as the others point out when it happens on the right, the better off will be, Sean.
Last word, Jonathan Gillum.
I think she should have to be forced into a timeshare down in Mexico like Linda was.
By the way, if you're really nice to her before she gets rid of it, maybe she'll give it to you for a week.
Yeah, we should all go.
I love him.
Listen, any trip that Geraldo and Jonathan are on and Linda are on, I'm in. I'll go.
It's going to be a good trip.
We'll take the whole team, Jason, Ethan, Sunshine.
That's great.
Oh, it'll be so fun. Go ahead. Last word to Jonathan.
You know, I am a moral and ethical person, and I travel a lot as you do, and I've been here in Arkansas on vacation for a month, and I see what morals and ethics are. If the news media starts looking to morals and ethics, they will start reaching all the people that they want in this country. But I want to challenge the advertisers as well. The advertisers should start looking at these networks, and if they're going to push to have one show pulled, they should push to have another show pulled, or they should just sit back and they should let the viewership determine what they want to watch, and then they should go forward with that. But this fake moral outrage, the American people are not buying it. They see right through it.
All right, thank you both.
Jonathan's had been on vacation for a month. I want his contract.
All right. Oh, there you go. All right. Thank you both for being with us. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. Your call straight ahead as we continue the Sean Hannity Show. All right. Glad you're with us. 25 till the top of the hour. Let's get to our busy telephones here. As promised, we start with Michelle. She is in North Carolina. Hi, Michelle. How are you? Glad you called.
Hey, thanks so much, Sean. I just wanted to let you know, I speak Spanish fluently, so if you guys need a translator or a tour guide, I used to live in Mexico, I'm more than happy to go down to the timeshare with y'all.
What have we opened up here? By the way, Linda, when do you get rid of that timeshare? When does the timeshare go away? Because I know you're working with Lone Star Transfer.
Lone Star Transfer is helping me to get rid of my Mexico timeshare. I'm sorry, I was talking to someone else. I can't play it off like you. I was distracted, Michelle. I'm not going to lie.
Well, you know, every day when the Rush Limbaugh people come in there and you're spending hours talking to them, distracting.
That's what I do all day.
You know, with all...
I do nothing else.
Listen, we're here to do a good show every day.
Oh, you got some nerve, boy. You better be careful.
And you better, you know, I need you to focus on your job.
Oh, do you?
It's not okay.
It's not okay.
Anyway, Michelle.
That's just me. Michelle, go ahead and ask me a question. You have my undivided attention.
Undivided attention. Go ahead.
Okay,
first of all.
I was just offering. I used to live in Mexico. Lived there for 4 years. Three of my kids were born there. And I said, if you guys needed a travel agent, if you need somebody to go down with you and be your translator.
No, you want to be a part of our party. Because now this apparently is going to be a goodbye Linda timeshare party.
Listen, all parties hosted by Linda are a good time.
Well, I throw a Christmas party now. It's an annual event, and she apparently takes it over. I have no say in my own Christmas party except
you
for
you can't be trusted with the guest list. That has to be in my control, especially the drinks. You have no taste in good drinks.
Listen,
you have
no
taste in good shots.
Excuse me, you guys were drinking this white, disgusting shot thing.
It's called rum chata. It's a well-known drink. Michelle, do you know what rum chata is?
I do not.
Okay,
thank
Michelle,
you.
That's the wrong answer all the time. Agree
Boom.
With me.
Boom. Thank you, Michelle.
You're not invited anymore.
I'll be a designated driver.
No, you're going to be the DD. Okay. Well, in any event, we had good drinks.
And listen, I will say this. If you ever have a party with this crazy crew I've got here and Geraldo and Jonathan Gillum, maybe we'll add Bo Deedle to the list.
And you know what else we did? We named our shot. It was called Uranium One Shot.
You did do a lot of silly things at the party. Yes, you did. And I stayed an extraordinary amount of time, and I still got yelled at for
leaving.
And
I drank a lot of extraordinary shots to save our country because we needed to get rid of Uranium One. So I took care of those shots. I just did as much as I could for the country.
It was a selfless act.
It was.
Yeah, well, you know, they do have... They do have... These radiation detectors all over New York. People go in and they drink whatever that fluid is that you got to drink before you get a
barium,
and then they apparently sets off all the triggers of radiation, And literally, there's like an old man, 80 years old, just gets out of the doctor's office and drank that crap.
Please tell me you don't have this in your system before we're about to go to an airport.
Me?
Yeah, you. Why are you talking about barium?
It doesn't matter. I'm not making the point that that's you get your rhenium one shot. That white stuff looked exactly like it.
No, barium has like a more of a greeny color to it.
Listen, it doesn't matter what I drink, if I drink it or not, because Sweet Baby James sets up every alarm. He's got a tattoo on his forehead that says, frisk me, wand me, stop me, search me.
Oh, that happens to me, too. And that happened to me the last two times when I went on the trips.
Well, I don't want to go on.
And it didn't happen to James.
I don't want to travel with any of you then. I want to just walk on through. You know, the worst part is, hi, Mr. Hannity, would you mind going over here for extra screening? I'm like, really?
Dude, I've been strip searched twice. Like, not kidding.
Really strip searched? Really?
Down to my underwear.
Yikes. That didn't happen to me yet. I haven't had that treatment.
But I kept my socks on. That's weird.
Oh, man. I didn't know they really did that unless there's a problem. Anyway, all right, Michelle, you're on the party list, but I probably won't go because I'm a loser. But you have a great day. Thank you for offering. Let's go back to our phones as we say hi to Joe, who's in New Jersey. Hey, Joe, how are you? We're glad you called.
Good, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
First of all, it's an honor to speak with you. And I thank God for people like you.
Thank you.
Rush and Laura every night that you're on the air. I find it a flat-out miracle our electoral system worked in spite of the real corruption that went on in this 2016 election. Not a religious person, but I almost see it as an act of God that it survived and it worked properly. Not that Hillary and Bernie Sanders won. That was tainted. But this actually worked out for us. I think it was from a higher authority that allowed it to work. I just wonder what you thought.
You know, look, I mean, I believe in a God, a creator, and I believe that, yeah, I think we're all endowed by our creator. And I guess that makes me in the mind of somebody like Joyless Behar, you know, somebody that's mentally unhinged.
You got it.
I believe we are blessed. I believe there is a God, a Father. I'm a Christian, and I believe in redemption, I believe in his son, Jesus. I believe in all of that. Jesus, I believe it. I just will say this. I don't think sometimes we recognize, and our founders and framers warned that government power needs to be checked regularly. Yeah. This is what they were afraid of, unchecked abuse of power. You know, if Hillary won, we would never know all that we now know. And, you know, I have no idea how I got in the middle of all this, to be perfectly blunt with you, except we just kept following the truth.
That's what I look at it as, Sean. It's a cleansing of our system that couldn't happen too soon.
But remember, this isn't over yet. You got to remember another thing: the deep state will always protect themselves. Don't forget the admonition of Chucky Schumer. You know, they'll get you. Oh, I wouldn't take on the Intel Committee. They'll get you eight ways and Sunday.
Right?
You know what? Is that really what our government is? Or having Brennan say, "Stay tuned, Mr. President," or anything like that?
Right. Hey, Sean, before I go, can I tell you something funny? I used to do with my son. Back when he was younger, we used to do the goodnight prayers and, you know, mm-hmm. God bless mom, pop, aunts, uncles. And I'd always throw in, and Sean Hannity. And until I started getting the stink eye from my wife.
But listen, I'll take all the prayers. I do believe in prayer. And I do believe that there's a God up above. I believe all of that. And I'll take all the prayers you want to give me. Because there's no doubt, you know, there's a group of us on that understand this truth, this abuse of power, this corruption that has happened. And we're fighting like hell to get this story out. And we want America to be preserved as it was intended. We can't have a dual justice system. You can't have the powerful tools of intelligence turned on the American people. You can't have warrants issued based on op research, unverified, uncorroborated. You can't have a justice system for Hillary and a different one for the rest of us. You can't. We're not going to survive if that type of abuse of power continues. And I just love this country. Too many people fought, bled, and died for this country for us not to fight to preserve the integrity of the system. And it's worse than I ever thought. Well, it was, you know, March 7th, 2017, Hannity and the Sean Hannity Show when we first revealed that there was a FISA warrant issued against Trump Tower. And we've grown from there, and we built it out from there. And we haven't even, we're not even talking about the unmasking abuse. We're not even talking about the surveillance abuse. We're not even talking about leaking intelligence abuse. We're not even talking about Uranium One anymore, which we will get back to. There's so much that has gone wrong here. It's scary. It actually is, to me, it's very sobering, and it's more intense than I can even describe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I just pray you keep fighting the good fight, along with everybody else I previously mentioned.
There's a gravity to it that I wish didn't exist. I'm just being very blunt and honest with you. And I feel like I see a real clear present danger if we don't get it right. It's not about me. It's about the country. It's about... Yeah. Well, there's a lot at stake here, much more than I would want to even admit to myself, probably.
It's a moral, gradual degradation.
Yes. You know, and don't ever forget, if you think it can happen here, oh, yeah, it can. Any minor perusal of history will show you great republics fail and fall, and empires fail and fall, and changes occur, and corruption has existed all throughout history. I just think we can get this wrong righted. I think we can get this country back on the right track and put in place safety procedures to ensure it never happens again. That's what I'd like to see happen.
It's almost like we needed this to happen, don't you think?
You know, I mean, I don't know. I actually think that if we ever got to the truth, the real, raw, unbridled truth, I don't think... I think we'd be shocked. It would shock our conscience and our soul. That's what I think. Anyway, I appreciate you being with us. Thank you so much for your vote of confidence, your prayers, your call. And, you know, one thing is just amazing about the American people, our capacity to get things right and our capacity. Look at the American people now see Mueller's witch hunt for what it is. It's taken a long time to get us there. And so many people now, maybe they're a little slow to the dance. They're now fully engaged as we are. And I'm glad they're there. I'm glad that people are jumping on board. I'm glad people are standing up for the truth. It's not a matter of who's right. It's a matter of what's right here. Let's say hi to Laura's in North Carolina. What's up, Laura? How are you?
Hey, I'm great. I've got three short things. I promise I'll be brief. Two are about what I call crumby Nancy Pelosi. Not crummy, but crumby. I'm a single mom of four. I have four children. Three sons are going to be rising sophomores. I make a pretty good living as a nurse, but I'll tell you what, $2,000 to me, it ain't crumbs. So if Nancy Pelosi, crumpy Nancy Pelosi, wants to call it crumbs, then God bless her.
Let me tell you, Nancy Pelosi has no idea what crumbs are. And you know, as somebody that worked in all these other jobs that had no money for a big part of my early adult life, let me tell you something. That $2,000 a year, that's not crumbs. That $2,000 a year, that's insurance. That's a house payment. That's a rental payment. That's, you know, maybe a new piece of equipment for your business. It's important.
So that offended me, but I didn't think I could go any further on Nancy Pelosi till the other day I heard her. President Trump was awesome last night bringing her up in his rally about MS-13. I was like, you have got to be kidding me that she is defending human life when she's pro-choice, you know, till the 39th week of life for a child, that she's telling me about the sanctity of human life. And the only people in the United States that even have the right to be offended would probably be PETA, because MS-13, they can't even be compared to animals. They're that bad. And so when he brought that up, I was just, good for you. Do not let it go. And you know what? We that voted for Trump and the conservative people, we are out here. We are still watching. We are still listening. And I'm going to tell you why they are going to win in November. Just why I knew for a fact they were going to win. Trump was going to win in November of 2016. Every other election, people have signs out in their yard, Republican, Democrat. This year, hardly anybody had Republican signs. And if they did, they were defaced.
Let me tell you what's going to happen.
Everywhere.
if people see this election for what it is, they want to raise taxes, they want to impeach the president, they want to keep Obamacare, and they don't want a southern border wall. If people see this for what it is, then it will be a very good year. All right, I got to run.
And that's why my little straw poll is no one's going to say they're a Republican until they go to the ballot box, just like they did in 2016. So watch the signs around. They're all Republican or all Democrats or independents, and you won't see any Republican signs because they don't want to be berated, just like I didn't want to be berated. But guess who won? Trump.
All right. Appreciate your call. Thank you so much for being with us, Laura. Real quick, John in Long Beach, California. We got about a minute for you, John. How are you?
Hey, Sean. Nice talk again. I've been 40 years. I'm getting to the point. I've been 40 years in journalism. When I started in 1979, it'll be 40 next year. The newspapers wanted to be objective, and if you were said to be subjective, it was an insult. The New York Times these days, Sarah Carter and Solomon should be getting mentioned for the Pulitzer, and they're not going to even get close to it because their narrative is not fitting the narrative of the New York Times, which is a disgrace. The Washington Post, I'm ashamed of my profession. You know, the New York Times, when they say all the news is fit to print on there, they should actually say all the news it fits because, it's what fits their agenda. I'm shocked. The thing about the New York Times, making the mistake and not even really apologizing for it. One thing real quick. I had a friend, Josh Meyer, I used to work with in L.A. He wrote the story for Politico about how Hezbollah was running drugs into the U.S. and using it to, support terrorism, and that the DEA was getting ready to bust him or was doing an investigation, and Obama put the kibosh on because he wanted to make this silly deal.
I don't even know where the time on this program goes every day. All right, Hannity, tonight, you do not want to miss this show. 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. And we're going to deal with this Samantha Bee issue. And why is there such vitriol towards any woman in Donald Trump's life? You want to go after the president? Fine. You're going to go after his wife, his 11-year-old kid, and his daughter? That really is the lowest of low. Also, the latest on the deep state. So much more news and information you won't get anywhere else. Thank you for being with us. See you tonight at 9. We will be back here tomorrow. As always, thanks for being with us.